Recorded live from the mats of Radical MMA in New York City, the Martial Culture Podcast, your source for in-depth combat sports and martial arts insights with Coach Rene Dreyfus and Matt Pierce. Ring the bell and let's get it on.
It's summer in New York City.
Hot time, summer in the city.
It's 92 degrees right now.
It's 92.
It's like 65 in here, though. It's too cold in here.
It's a little. It's nice. It's comfortable.
It feels okay. This usually you need
a sweatshirt. But you know, it's a dry heat.
It's a dry heat. Yeah. Fuck off, dry heat.
No, you know, it's funny because in my academy, I decided that I would not turn the air conditioning on ever again in my academy. So it gets really hot, and people deal with it. It's not like terrible, like endangering life hot, but it's hot. And then the thing is that we have these dehumidifiers, but they get in the hot summer, they get maxed out, and there's just pools of sweat all over the mat. It's like you're like, wow, we worked hard.
Yeah, you should do hot yoga on weekends or something.
You know, we totally should. I wouldn't even have to install any. Just have a martial arts clash, and then have everybody do hot yoga afterwards. It's like, there you go.
That's all right. Yeah,
sure. Little unhygienic, but.
Well, you know you can. You signed up for it.
Yeah. The training has been really, really hard at Radical because we have three guys competing coming up at the end of the month. And so we're really rocking and rolling. I'm super, super proud of their progress. And I can't wait till two. We had, Devin, my fighter, fought before. We haven't talked about that. He just fought. Mm-hmm. And he won in 1 minute, 22 seconds. So he's fighting again. And I was very proud of him. That being said, you know, and all respect to the opponent, but I think, you know, it was, don't be disrespectful with mismatch. You know, it's like some people are a little bit more green than others. MMA is drawing a lot of people these days because it's very popular. And this is what I want to talk about. So you have people that they want to make their debut in mixed martial art very, very quickly. And I've even turned people away from Radical because I'm like, they're like, I want to fight in the next 6 months. I'm like, yeah, no, not going to happen. You know, just not safe. It's not a safe thing. So I could see that our opponent, Devin's opponent, was one of those guys who maybe could have seasoned a little bit longer. Devin has been with me for a number of years and has had a lot of competitive experience, both in wrestling and then in he just got his blue belt under me, but he's already won a purple belt many times and many matches, I should say. He's a tough competitor, you know. And so, if you haven't been training as long as he has, it's tough. And I told the promoter, I said 0-0, but he's good. Give me a guy good. And you know, they matched us up from someone from a top team, but the level of experience was just different. So we just took him down, mounted him, took his back, choked him out. It was like. Yeah, it was a little anticlimactic.
Playing one of those old RPGs where he overleveled. Your fighter was overleveled.
Overleveled, what's that?
So in a role-playing game like Final Fantasy back in the old days, there's levels. So if you're like level 10, you're stronger than level 5.
Right.
But there's certain areas and certain bosses that are certain levels. So if you're having a tough time beating a boss, you could go back to a lower level area, gain a lot of experience, and then be level 15 and go fight a level 10 boss. So your guy, even while he was 0-0, he was level 20. And he was fighting a guy that was level 5, who was also 0-0.
Right, exactly.
So you tricked him.
No, but I mean, a little bit, like that's sometimes called sandbagging.
Yeah.
That you intentionally hold your fighter back so that he does well against lower level competition. That's never our intention. Yeah. That's never our intention. I mean, but mixed martial arts is dangerous, so I believe in over-preparing my fighters. I never lie about their experience. I never lie about their level. I'm always very honest. That being said, if nobody asks me, I won't divulge information. Sure. You know, like the promoter, you know, did legitimately ask me about him, but you know, and I was totally honest. But if he didn't ask me, I wouldn't volunteer. You know, but that being said, I always say, guys, we want to fight the best. We want to fight top guys, and we win, lose, whatever. But We it's about the challenge, right? Dave Cameron is a very famous jiu-jitsu competitor, was originally one of the coaches at AKA. He said, crave the battle, not the glory. And I love that quote. I just love it. It's like, crave the challenge, the battle, the blood, the sweat, the life-changing commitment to excellence and dedication. Waking up 6 a.m. every morning, doing your running, doing your this, doing your stretch, do all the things that nobody else is doing. While everybody's sleeping, you're working. That is a life-changing dedication to your own personal achievement. And regardless of the outcome, you won, right? Because you challenged yourself. So, but it was a good experience. We went out and had some Italian food to celebrate afterwards. And then we drove back. And it's funny because we're in a car with a lot of people who can't drive. And so the fighters wondering because my license expired. So we're all living in Manhattan. We don't have licenses for cars. So I'm like, you just fought and now you got to drive 4 hours back. But it was cool. We had a fun drive back and it was a good experience. And he's fighting again in 3 weeks. And Sandro, my other fighter, is fighting for title. And I have another fighter. Rafael is making his MMA debut as well. And we're just super excited. The training, everything's going super well. I couldn't be happier with the progress of my students. And post pandemic, we're really rocking and rolling and doing well. And I'm very happy. You know, this will be actually our first ever show where we're fielding three fighters at the same time in the same show. We've never done that before. I always wanted to focus on one fighter and kind of give him my all. And I think that's important. But what I realize is that I can focus on more than one as I get better as a teacher. And I can give each fighter what they need. But I don't have to be just only one fighter at a time. And, you know, it's me maturing as a coach and a fighter, too. So it was great. I'm very excited. But that being said, the training at Radicals, like I said, there's just every night, there's this lake of human, you know, perspiration. You know, we can solve the drought crisis in the Southwest. It's really, I would say this is funny because it's totally gross, but at one time I was training in the academy and everything got so incredibly sweaty, and I said screw it. So I went down, I ran and I did a belly flop slide right through the puddle. You're disgusting. And then it was like, everybody's first reaction was like, oh, and then everybody said, you know what, I'll try to do some of the whole class is falling. Oh, my God. It was, you know what?
Bonding experience.
It was all our sweat anyway. It wasn't everybody else's. Oh. And we just body slide through it. And we kept doing it. It was just hilarious.
Do you have a TikTok account?
I do not. That was years ago. Yeah. I would be afraid of, like, spraining my ankle. Yeah. So, over the weekend, though, we had a UFC 290, which was amazing. And I was very happy because I called a couple fights correctly. And one was the Pantoja-Moreno fight. And I picked Pantoja, which most people are picking Moreno. But it was a drawn-out dog fight of a death match. Oh, my God. The amount of punishment these guys took, I mean, you had to see it. And it, the theme of UFC 290 was how much punishment can these fighters take? Wow. And I mean, people were voting that maybe one of the best fights of 2023. Yeah. It was unreal. You should definitely see it. I know you were busy this weekend, yeah, but definitely see it. And fantastic type fight. And we hit every aspect of MMA, you know, grappling, striking. And what's inspiring about Pantoja, and this is going to sound disrespectful, but Pantoja, I don't mean it this way. I actually really love the guy. He's actually one of my favorite fighters in terms of attitude. Pantoja is not a good athlete. Oh. He's not. He is. You can tell when he strikes that, like, when you look at guys who are really good athletes, when they strike, it just looks better, right? And Pantoja is now the 125-pound UFC world champion. This is a guy who is not a good athlete. He is completely made of hard work, stubbornness, grit, and discipline. And he trained his way up and sacrificed his way up and was doing, like, even while he was in the UFC, he was like being an Uber delivery driver till like 4 a.m. and then getting up at 7 and training. Like, this kid is just unstoppable. But he is, I'm telling you, it's amazing to see someone who's athletically not gifted, but find through first through jiu-jitsu, right? Which is what I always recommend. Find a way to understand your body better and be better. And then through absolute hard work, turn himself into a, you know, a competent boxer. I mean, he's got power. That being said, he is too stiff. His boxing is not good. It's not great. But it's adequate. It's adequate. But because he's not an athlete, he's always a little bit. So he took a lot of punishment. And I wish he needs to think about his strategy in striking a little bit better to not take as much. But like I said, because he's not a good athlete, the striking element is hard for him. But it's wonderful to see someone who, when he goes on the ground, the man is a master. And that's the wonderful thing about jiu-jitsu. And I'm not trying to say that jiu-jitsu is the best art in the world, but I think it's the most accessible art for people who are bad athletes, but highly committed and intelligent. Right? If you are disciplined and have a bit of intelligence and a terrible athlete, the best martial art for you to do to start with is Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Because you can get really, really good and beat people who are much better athletes by hard work, determination, and strategy. And you can see that, like, he was doing very well. That being said, Moreno, who I slept on for years, is always improving. And it was an amazing fight. And it was a split decision. It was very close. But I had it for Pantoja. And then one of my favorite fighters, Forrest Whitaker. Robert Whitaker. Not Forrest Whitaker. That's a different Whitaker. Sorry. Not Forrest Whitaker. And you know, I want to thank the listeners who are correcting my misnaming of certain people. Sometimes I get certain people's names wrong and they email me and they said, "You didn't mean this guy, you meant that guy." So to the listeners who are correcting me, thank you very much. Sometimes I slip up in the names, you know. So I don't write the things down. I just have them in my head, and sometimes a similar name is visited. So a shout out to, and thank you to the listeners, especially one of my listeners in UK who's always commenting and liking our episodes. So anyway, Robert Whitaker was fighting Dricus du Plessis. Now, Robert Whitaker is incredibly good boxer, MMA boxer. Right? Mm-hmm. Incredibly good at jiu-jitsu. Very good at takedowns. Dricus du Plessis is an ugly fighter. Not ugly looking. I mean, the way he fights is just ugly. It's just not. It's awkward. It's just not. It's not clean. It's not really that good. Except he's got power. And when you stand in front of this guy, and you eat his power, you're going to have a bad day. So I've said this many times. How do you fight someone who's taller than you, reach advantage, and more powerful? You have to have not just technique, but strategy. And Whitaker, he does certain things that I really like, but there are things he does that I don't like. And I mean, I'm a huge fan of him. First, as a representative of the sport, I don't know if he could get much better. He's this wonderful family man who's very vulnerable about his bouts with depression and suicidal thoughts. And he's never like trash talking. He's always like, this is the perfect martial art attitude. He's also very funny. Like, he's like George St. Pierre, except if George St. Pierre could crack some jokes, you know? And he's also very, very open and vulnerable about his depression. And I mean, this guy is amazing. I can't say enough about how much I like him as a person. But he does certain technical things that I think really good, but other things are really bad. So if you're dealing with a guy who has really heavy hands, don't stand in front of him with your hands down. dude. And he likes this bladed stance. You know, like the karate guys, like Stephen Thompson. You know how Stephen Thompson fights? You've seen Stephen, the karate guy. So, or you know how they fight and they bounce. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So Matt just did a karate pose. Right. It's pretty cool. And so when you're bladed, so I want you, Matt, I want you to stand up and pretend you're Stephen Thompson. Now, just go over there. Right. Okay. So everybody, Matt is now doing his karate impression. Right? Yeah. We got a big hat. No, that seems like Aikido mat. Okay, so get a little more bladed, right? So, no, this way, right. So sideways, right? Sideways. Now, throw like side kicks. Throw like a side kick. No, with your front leg. My front leg side kick. That pisao kick that kicked in the... Yeah, exactly. Just low, nice and low. Yeah, a little more bladed, a little more sideways. Right now, a little more. So yeah, like a lot of guys fight like that karate, like almost complete sideways, right? Completely sideways. Now, I want you to think, what weapons did you just take away from yourself in an MMA context? What feels very unnatural? Can you shoot takedowns from the stance? Not easily, exactly. Just see it now. Square up a little bit more. Now think about taking a takedown. Yeah, see it? It feels much easier, right? So the more you blade, right, the more, which means going sideways, of course, less of a target. You show less of a target. Mm-hmm. And you can play kind of what Mayweather does, which he does a flick jab, kind of this Philly shell action, right? So for pure striking, blading can be good. Muay Thai guys don't blade as much because they worry about low kicks and things like that. But generally, Muay Thai is a little bit more square, right? Boxers and karate guys blade a lot, mm-hmm. right? And they use that front side kick a lot. Wrestlers don't blade, right? They're like when they're wrestling stance, like regular freestyle wrestlers, like you're basically leaning over, your knees are pointing forward like a sprinter. Because you want to drive forward. Blading takes away your ability to sprint forward. Mm-hmm. So by blading out, you lose the ability to shoot without changing your stance. Now, what I would have done with Dricus Duplessis is I would have had a much more wrestling-centric approach. But tricky wrestling, right? Because once you clinch a guy, his bombs won't hurt you, right? And so, but Middleker was playing on the outside, until he got caught. Then boy, did he get caught. And then he shelled up and he just got dropped like a sack of potatoes. Mm-hmm. I was really sad. And it just shows a fighter with better technique, because he does. Everything Whitaker does is better. But a poor strategy, right, will not beat a inferior fighter. The superior fighter with bad strategy will lose to the inferior fighter. Can lose very, very much so. And actually, I would say in the UFC, it's very common because a lot of people have a lot of power in the UFC, particularly in the higher weight classes. The inferior fighters with power can make it very far because they got power. And you really have to think about, how am I going to fight around this guy's advantages? And the next fight I want to talk about is Volkanovski versus Yair Rodriguez. And, Div, you're familiar with Yair Rodriguez?
Yeah, I heard of him.
Yeah, he's very long-legged, loves to kick, loves to throw, like, Taekwondo to kicks. Okay, that's not nice. But you know, like, Taekwondo types kicks. He's the only person to throw the tornado, the Nanamban, the double tornado kick, right? When you bring one up and you spin again, kind of. You bring the first leg up, you spin. He's the only one to do that flying tornado kick, to do it, like, more than once in the UFC. He's done it quite a number of times, right? In a high-level UFC, right? Maybe in the low levels of MMA I've seen. But he's done it quite a number of times. He also has very, very, very sharp boxing. So he's taken, like, Muay Thai background a little bit of Taekwondo, a lot of Mexican, good, solid Mexican boxing, because he's trains with all these guys, the Alexa Grasso, all these, they're all in this camp where they're just knocking it out. What I understand is they go up to these, like, ruins, this, like, in the middle of nowhere, and they train in this, like, way up in the elevation where there's, like, Aztec ruins or something, and they're just hanging out. They have a compound there. They don't train in the ruins, but they're right up there in this super elevation with these amazing, amazing Mexican boxers. People don't know them. Some of the Mexican boxers are the best in the world. One of my favorite coaches, Nacho Berenstein, is a Mexican coach, and he's created a huge amount of champs. Man, Mexican boxing can be very good. Sometimes they have a reputation of taking too much damage, but the really good coaches in Mexico are absolutely freaking amazing. They know the game in and out, back and forth, and all these Mexican champions are drawing on that. And the thing is, they're starting to have some good grappling too. You know, so you've seen the Mexican fighters really come up. Brandon Moreno, Yair Rodriguez, Alex Grasso, these are all people who won championships and titles and coming up the pipe are a lot more. And so, you know, this guy, Yevgeny Rodriguez, he has this reach advantage over Volkanovski, with the legs especially. Volkanovski is much shorter, right? So who do you think has the striking advantage? Well, obviously, right?
Reach
exactly, right? And Yair Rodriguez is not a guy without power. I mean, he's dropped guys with kicks and hurt them, right? I would say the fight that I lost the pick on when he hit Josh Emmett, he kicked Josh Emmett. I believe maybe Josh had a previously broken rib. I don't know. But he kicked Josh Emmett to the point where that rib was not the same. And then Josh just like turned off. He went, and then he just fell into a triangle. But it was really the kick that did it. And Josh is no slouch, you know? So yeah, Eric kicks hard. What do you think Volkanovski did to get out of that reach? What did you think? Did he just try to outbox?
Get close.
He got close, and then he zigzagged. He went. He switched hands. He never ate anything.
Wow.
And he had great technique, but the strategic thinking of his camp was unfreaking believable. Then he put him on the ground and beat the freaking crap out of him on the ground.
Wow.
Because I don't care how good a kicker you are, when you're laying flat on your back, you ain't kicking hard. And Volkanovski just ran a clinic, and there was not one part of that fight where I'm like, Volkanovski's losing. Like, he just ran it, and then just destroyed him and got him. And that was it. It was beautiful display of not just technique, but how to think strategically and nullify your opponent's advantages.
Wow.
Right? So you had two guys, two amazing fighters. Whitaker, who I really, really respect. And I mean, like, all things around, like, he's one of my favorite fighters, especially as a person, as an individual, as a human being, as a face for the sport. I don't think you could ever get better than him. Never trash talks, just funny and good personality and vulnerable and no toxic masculine. Just great dude. Great dude. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those guys that you'd love to meet, just shake his hand and say, you know, I think you're a great dude, you know? And great technique too. Phenomenal thing. Work ethic, everything, all 100%.
Forrest Whitaker as well.
Forrest Whitaker is very good. great in Rogue One. Excellent Rogue One.
Yeah.
Nerd alert. Yay.
Star Wars.
I'm waiting for the Ahsoka miniseries to come out. It's coming out in a couple of weeks.
I know.
It's going to be good. Yeah.
Getting rid of Marvel crap. Secret Wars sucks.
Yeah, it's not that great.
Secret Invasion.
Yeah, it's not that great. It's okay. Anyway, yeah. Star Wars stuff lately has been good, right? Anyway, aside from Saw Gerrera, so, you know, Robert Whittaker is amazing. Volkanovski is amazing. Two guys that technically I think are amazing, but strategically, one did the right thing, one did the wrong thing, right? The old school Gracie rule, super far away or super close, big guys can't hurt you, is the name of the game. When you're fighting a hulking monstrosity, you want to be really, really far or really, really in if they can knock you down. And Volkanovski's like, dude, I'm going to get in on you. I'm going to zigzag, get in on you, find a way, take you down, and destroy you. And you never have an ability to hurt me. And it's true.
Smart.
Yeah, very smart. He just, I mean, I'm not, Yair was in it because he's a great fighter. He was in it. But then, then Volkanovski kind of just, you know, figured him out, and there's some of those rounds where like very, very lopsided. And Volkanovski is also a great, great champion. You know, something about these Australian sports culture I really like. They're funny. They do stupid things like drink beer out of shoes and stuff, but they're funny. They're very hard workers. They're very interesting mix of humility as well as incredible hard work, you know? But Volkanovski pulled it off. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing display of technique. And it was a great night of fights. Cool. And, you know, I heard recently a criticism of the UFC. Dana White not paying fighters too much. That's true. I mean, it's,
sure,
you know, whatever. I don't really follow that much, but yeah. I've been a little bit defending, you know, we don't know what the behind the scenes financials are and all that, but you know, honestly, you know, fighters should probably be paying more if other shows are paying much more. You know, anyway, whatever. But the real criticism that I heard, right, that really kind of grounded me is that the UFC is not putting on the high-quality cards that it used to 20 years ago, right? So 20 years ago, right, you would have, like, you know, George St. Pierre headlining card. Then you'd have, you know, Randy Couture headlining card. Then this and that. And it's not every card is filled with star power. But I think the issue is, especially the free ones, I think the issue is that one of the things about MMA is that it's a much bigger sport right now. But the fighter pool has not increased that much. Meaning, you have PFL, ONE, Bellator, the UFC, and a bunch of other shows that are paying people money. And the top-level talent is split between them, right? And particularly now that the PFL is really growing. And like this, and ONE FC, these guys are growing big. ONE FC is actually, in terms of like viewership rates, because they broadcast to much more populous areas like China and India. In terms of viewership rates, they're dwarfing the UFC. And Nielsen regarded them as the most watched sports brand in the world. ONE FC. Wow. That being said, the UFC is, you know, doesn't try to broadcast to India, right? So it's a little different, but. That's pretty amazing. So, but the talent pool has not expanded to fill that. There's much more demand for fights than there is people to fight. And I see this happening at the amateur level too. Oh. So what you have is you have guys filling out cards, sometimes coming into MMA a little bit earlier. And also you can't have star-studded cards every single show.
Well, they do ONE every weekend.
Right, because they do, exactly, they do ONE every weekend now. So, of course, you're not going to have star power for every show. But if you look at 290, it was great fight after great fight after great fight. I'm like, whoa. And there was another one, Dan Hooker versus, But
does that mean like the, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. But it was a war. It was, you can't say it wasn't entertaining.
Are UFC events not becoming events anymore?
Yeah, I think especially the free ones are just like Friday night
games.
Yeah, like Friday night basketball or baseball or something. You know, it's like it's on every night, and there's or it's Monday night football or whatever.
I don't remember the last fight that got like national attention, like on regular news. You know, like I remember when UFC, when there was a UFC pay per view every 6 months or every 3 months or whatever, it was like huge. Like you're saying, like Randy Couture.
Right.
All these, those were huge events that were like hyped up for so long. I mean, the Conor McGregor one coming up, that's been hyped up a lot, which isn't happening anymore, but still, it's like.
Oh, it's not happening?
I don't know. He's not. He pulled himself out of the USADA pool.
Oh, he did? Yeah. Well, no kidding. Because, steroids.
But there just hasn't been. Like, I think the frequency is they're shooting themselves in the foot by just putting out so much.
Okay, so.
Well, if the Super Bowl happened every weekend, it wouldn't be the Super Bowl anymore.
Right, right, exactly. That's my point. Yeah. Now, I think the goal of Zuffa was, okay, before I say it, let me retract. I had this conversation with this woman. This is going about, yeah, it was like over 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And she worked in television. She's a television show producer or something. And it was, yeah, this is a long time ago, right? And she said, I could never see MMA like being on primetime channel, like, and then leading into the news. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? The UFC before this one was on Channel 7, and it led in. It was 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock, and it led right into the 11 o'clock news. Like, it was exactly what she said would never happen. So the other thing is the UFC has made more money last year than they ever made. So again, I mean, fighter pay and all this, I don't know, whatever. But the UFC financially is doing extremely well. Now, the goal, I think the original goal of the Zuffa brothers when they took over the UFC was not to make events being the Super Bowl. They were trying to make it more like basketball, where there's like a basketball game look, I don't know basketball, but this is like every time I turn on TV, there's a basketball game going on.
90 games a season.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like every weekend, there's a basketball game. And, you know, if the Knicks win tomorrow or lose tomorrow, you know, somebody will write about it, but it's not big news. And, you know, the March Madness-y thing, or that's college, right? Or I don't even know what I'm talking about, right? But you know, like there's always some news, but it's not like front page news when one team beats another. Right. And I think that's really what happens. Is like their goal is to make MMA so mainstream that it's just normal. Hmm. And they're right. They succeeded.
Yeah.
Like not only the UFC, like I turn on ESPN Plus and there's like PFL, there's this, like there's all these different fight sports. Not to mention, like the UFC has brought in much more eyes onto Muay Thai, onto sport grappling, things like that. If you go into UFC Fight Pass, they have sport, you know, sport jiu-jitsu, things like that.
Yeah.
The first time I've ever seen it in America, I watched a TV show about judo. Like this judo TV. It's a British TV show, and they follow the judo championships. And now I'm like, oh my God, on TV there's a show about judo. That would have never happened if it wasn't for the UFC.
Now, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, and I think that's a good goal, and I love that it's bringing MMA into the more mainstream, but then you got to have a Super Bowl. NBA has the finals.
Right.
Baseball has the playoffs.
What?
Super Bowl. Like, I need two big events a year that are like, let's sit down and watch this. Everybody has to watch it.
Hmm. You know, okay, so that's a good question. How do you do that? Because if you're talking purely technique, like Brandon Moreno versus Pantoja, Volkanovski versus Ismail Makhachev. That was like the last one. Oh my God. Like, how can you not say that is a super fight of super fights?
But do you want?
Right. But no, let me finish. But most people are not tuning into that. Who's the biggest draw of the UFC ever? Let's be honest here. I hate to say it, but it's freaking Conor McGregor and Brock Lesnar. Conor McGregor, Brock Lesnar, Ronda Rousey. All people who had very, very outsized personalities. So the only way you're gonna get like these mega events is if you have something more than just the technical fighters, like the, you know, the look, you know what, I watched Lomachenko fight for the boxing title. He wound up losing, but it was one of the most amazing displays of boxing talent on both sides. And you're like, no, we talked about it, right? That's crazy to me because it was like, I rewound the fight like three times to learn things. Like this beautiful, beautiful display of the craft of boxing. And you know, some people watch it on Showtime, whatever. That should be the King of Kings matches. Mm-hmm. And of course it got some, you know, well, Islam Makhachev versus Volkanovski that happened before, or even here, because you're one of the 145 versus Volkanovski. This title fight should have been like, amazingly promoted. I mean, I think it was, but I mean, they did well in their viewership and everything. But yeah, you're right. It's not the Super Bowl, because you know Volk is he's not Conor McGregor, but and I'm okay with that because that card UFC 290 was unbelievably amazing from the beginning. Lots of very high level fights, very intense, great matchmaking.
I think I would like to see UFC go back maybe to its roots and more do like tournaments. Ooh. I would love that. Like, let's just fight 12 guys in one day.
I completely
that would be an event.
Agree with you, but you can't do it safely unless you do what they do in Japan. Because actually, there's this tournament in Japan called Kudo. I think we talked about it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's Kudo's a karate organization, but they went basically MMA. So it's MMA and a gi, but they wear this headgear. It's like the space helmet to stop the brain damage.
Oh, crap.
Yeah. Yeah, right, exactly. So they wear the safety helmet, and then also they limit ground and pound. Mm-hmm. Because if you're taking like 20 elbows on ground and pound, it's not good for you, right? They also, the time limit is much shorter because you got like 10 fights in a weekend. That being said, let me tell you, because I watched the Kudo Championships, I was on the edge of my seat because you're looking at the bracket and this, and also like the self-defense championship that we were talking about where it was like a tournament.
Yeah.
So I think what you could do, PFL is a tournament and they branch it like in months. So there's a season and there's the tournament winner at the end of the season. I think that's good, but
could they
and they're popular for it. But, you know, it's weird how the boxing model of, like, he's a title fighter, and then we just match up like this. We don't make a tournament. It's just, like, the default.
That's what it is.
That's what it is, right?
Like, I want to do, we're going to make a MMA promotion right now, all right? Radical's going to be the head of it. I'll be the creative director.
Sure.
So what it's going to be is it's going to be a year-long tournament, and it's going to be rules like NASCAR rules, where you get points for where you place in certain matches throughout the year. And at the end of the year, we're going to have one tournament in different brackets, and we're going to have a champion, and then a second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth place at the end of the year based on
but
your
that's
performance
like the,
during
that's
the
actually
year.
Like the PFL. That's what they do.
Don't tell me that. I've already trademarked it.
No, and you know what you should do? This is what they do at the end in Japan. Then all the champions of the weight class fight each other.
Royal Rumble.
Yeah, right. They fight each other. Like, the champions fight each other in absolutes.
Royal Rumble? For real?
No, not all at the same time.
Oh. Well, can we do that in ours?
A Royal Rumble. That would be dangerous, man.
With headgear.
I would be all for
just
it.
Exhibition for fun. At the end.
I love the Russians do that. 5-on-5 MMA. It's crazy. Okay, so, you know, in Radical, we started this in-house tournament. Did I tell you about this? So we started, I don't think I did. So we have an in-house tournament. Yeah. So everybody's going to compete, right? And we have different match rules depending on your ability level and skill level. And first, everybody starts in the lower level matches, which is just rear naked choke battle. It's like, I try to choke you. It's sort of like, for the people who are familiar, EBI overtime. I start on your back. I have to finish my choke. Mm-hmm. You have to escape, right? Yeah. And everybody who wins gets a point for their team. And we have, like, I mean, the last time we did it, we had, like, God, we had to have had at least 150 matches.
Damn.
Yeah, so we had back sparring.
Right, radical?
Yeah, right. And everybody's sparring. There's, like, 20 sparring groups at the same time.
Dude, next time you do it, tell me about it. I want
to. Yeah, actually, I'd also like you to come because you can help organize. Because I was, like, a one-man show.
So you should film this for your YouTube channel. This is cool.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good
I'll
idea.
Bring a camera.
I'll
do it for you.
Yeah, so then there was, after the back sparring, there was also, like, I'll start in a pin, and I have to hold that pin and dominate you in positions and then try to submit you from that pin. But if you escape, if you get to a guard position, it's over. Then there's MMA and what we call Pancras rules, which MMA, but no punch at the face, just slaps. And there's all different rules based on your skill level, right? Mm-hmm. So, we probably had easily 150 matches.
That's so cool.
Because we had like 20 going on at a time, and we did it for like 2 hours, and nobody rests.
Yeah.
So, and nobody's allowed to sit down. So if anybody sits down, their team gets 5 points taken out. Everybody has to stand up, and they get, and so one, and you fight till someone wins. There's no time limit. You fight, every match is till someone wins.
Yeah.
So there are matches that went on for, there was one match that went on for, like, 30 minutes.
Damn.
Yeah, it was one of my students, Pedja, and he was fighting. I forgot who was fighting. And he fought, because in the back sparring, you get a turn and I get a turn. So if I tap you, right, and then you tap me, we go again. Huh. Until I tap you and you don't tap me, or you tap me and I, right, exactly, until it's not even, right? So they kept going back and forth, right? And it was like 30 minutes.
Wow.
And it was crazy. Great thing is, no one got injured.
Yeah.
We did it really smart. Absolutely no injuries. Especially because I made everybody doing the MMA. I made a rule. Everybody had to wear headgear. And also, contact to the face. The minute there was hard contact, we rolled that a standing TKO. So we just kept it safe. So, so the minute there was hard contact, we stopped it, right? I think if you're doing tournaments and you care about your student safety, you have to do it that way. There's one hard contact. Like I said, I'm going to stop it at hard contact. So, and then I had some matches with one guy, and he's actually a skilled jiu-jitsu guy, but starting his MMA journey. Great, great, great student. But he wasn't exactly familiar how to defend himself as well as he thought, right? You know, even though he'd done some Muay Thai. Mm-hmm. But he took a hard kick and a hard punch to the head, and I stopped it. He's like, I'm like, okay. He's like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm like, okay, but we're going to stop. He's like, oh, yeah, okay, got it. Good idea. Nobody got hurt. Yeah. But he took some hard punches. He wasn't defending himself. I stopped it right away. So I think if you have a tournament set, you cannot let them just blast on each other. Because by the fourth fight, I mean, everybody's brains are mashed potatoes, you know? You know, so either you're going to do the tournament or you're going to, with modified rules, or you're going to do one-off matches, yeah. You know?
The virtual reality fighting.
There we go.
I don't know how to do that.
You know, I cannot wait till virtual reality.
You know who might know how to do that?
Ooh.
Mark Zuckerberg?
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
He's got the virtual reality metaverse.
You know, he actually was training with Volkanovski before his fight in the metaverse. Yeah, yeah. That's and they're sparring in the metaverse.
Is he good?
Okay. So I got interviewed about this, right? And, you know, this Elon Musk. So this is crazy, right? Yeah. So this is another thing we got to talk about. We should almost have an entire episode on this, yeah. Right? But, you know, when I was a kid, the archetype of manhood was boxer. Like, you know, you're a tough guy, you're a boxer, you're a tough guy. Mm-hmm. Then Bruce Lee came out, and the kind of like the absolute highest point, the peak description of like tough, like what every kid wanted to be was Bruce Lee. Every kid, it switched. Every kid, we don't even know in 1978 to 80, every kid was kung fu crazy. Mm-hmm. And adults too. Like they had to make a law in New York saying people can't walk around with nunchucks. That was a law. No joke. Like nunchucks got banned because everybody's walking around with nunchucks. Because it was like, you wanted to be a man, you're going to be like Bruce Lee. Mm-hmm. That became the thing. Then in the 80s, it became like karate, Chuck Norris. Like, everybody was a karate guy, right? For a brief time, that switched to other weird styles. And then, I'm sorry?
Then Stallone and Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, a little bit to some people, right? But I still think that yeah, and you're right, though. But a lot of people, you're exactly right. Actually, I stand corrected. Because Stallone and Schwarzenegger changed the way people lifted. Before, they lifted a little bit more performance-y. After that, they lifted much more like bodybuilders. So they changed our definition of what, like, attractiveness is. So before, if you look at Charlton Heston in Planet of the Apes, who was like, you know, sex symbol of the 60s, he looks nothing like Schwarzenegger.
Right.
Now, if you're going to be an action hero, you have to be more like Schwarzenegger than you would Stallone. I mean, Charlton Heston or you know, Lee Majors or... You know, these guys back in the day, they changed our aesthetic. They changed our aesthetics.
Yeah.
And now you're like, oh, you're fit? Well, you're going to look like this guy. Like Chris Hemsworth in, you know, Extraction or Thor or mm-hmm. anybody in the Marvel Universe. They're like, they look a little bit more like a bodybuilder mm-hmm. than they actually do like a combat athlete. You know, so yeah, you're right. You know, you're right. Then it kind of became the absolute... epitome of manhood for a short time was like Navy SEAL military guy, right?
Right.
The UFC changes all. You look at kids today. I mean, I can't tell you how many kids email me all the time they want to join my academy. And we're an adult-only academy because we really train hard. But there's so many kids that I want to fight. The kids today do not look up to boxers like they were in my day. Mm-hmm. They do not look up to... They want to be Conor McGregor. They want mm-hmm. to be Khabib. They want to be... You know, TJ Dillashaw. They want to be Demetrius Johnson. They want to be Moreno. They want to fight MMA. There's this dream of MMA. And the great thing is that it is real. Like if you're good at MMA, you're actually a pretty good fighter. You know, if you're great at boxing, you're great at boxing, right? Which is fantastic. I mean, absolutely fantastic. But it's one dimension. You're great at Taekwondo, you're one dimension. You know? MMA, it's your Swiss Army knife. You know, you have lots of skills, and it is, I don't think it's arguable to say that MMA is the best basis. It's not sufficient, right? But it's the best basis to build a self-defense paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, there's no better training. Like we said in the self-defense challenge that we talked about a couple episodes ago, who won? All the MMA guys won. And the MMA guy with no previous self-defense training. By his own admission, Jeff Chan, he's like, I never did self-defense. I just did MMA, right? He never defended a knife before, and he was one of the more successful guys, right? And the guys who did self-defense, like, did crappy, mm-hmm. right? So MMA is now, you're, for better or for worse, the arbiter of masculinity and manhood, which is why everybody wants to do it. Who was at the last UFC? Well, guess what? Donald Trump. Because he loves to brush off that little bit shine of masculinity because that's what he trades in, right? But it's not just him. Like, there's so many politicians that, you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was, like, out doing push-ups and, you know, weightlifting and pose, like, you know, like, trying to bust stuff. And there's a huge history of this. Who is the very first, posthumously, but very first American judo black belt? Teddy Roosevelt.
Really?
President Teddy Roosevelt, the guy who actually introduced, helped introduce judo to America,
yeah.
Right? What about Abraham? You know who? Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
Do you know how many fights Abraham Lincoln had? Like fights, not battles in the Civil War. I mean, like street, like fights, matches.
75.
Over 300.
Oh wow.
Abraham Lincoln was a champion catch wrestler.
Oh wow.
I think he only lost one, but he was, catch wrestling is basically a form of mixed martial arts, meaning it's different types of wrestling, submission wrestling and regular throwing wrestling, all combined.
He wasn't very good at self-defense, though.
I'm sure he was quite good.
Well,
right.
He got
shot. Oh, ha-ha. From quite a bit away, right? I mean, I don't when he got shot, how close was the guy when he
shot?
He
was right behind him, wasn't he?
Oh, he's right behind you. Right, gallery? He was right behind him. Yes, you're right.
Was it too soon?
I'm thinking. I'm sorry. I'm thinking Kennedy. You said Abraham Lincoln, but I was thinking Kennedy. Right?
Kennedy good at fighting? Fighting off the women, right?
I know, right? I think the Kennedy brothers boxed for a while.
Probably not.
Yeah, but you know, also the Kennedys did trade in an image of masculinity, youth.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. Sexy.
Who's
exactly.
Who's the strongest president?
The strongest president?
Like, who you wouldn't want to fight?
Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah?
Yeah, for sure. And George Washington, too, is also a fantastic wrestler.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because he's a military man. Yeah. Like, that's what they did, right? Back then, they would always, military groups would always, like, train wrestling to get more powerful. He was a very good wrestler, but Abraham Lincoln, I think, was probably, and Teddy Roosevelt, by all accounts, was an excellent hand-to-hand combatant. Mm-hmm.
He never was president, but I bet John McCain was pretty good at fighting. He was scrappy.
No, I don't
know.
No?
Well, he was captured.
But he was a good military man, but yeah.
He seemed like he'd be good at fighting.
I don't think he ever trained.
Hmm.
I mean, I could be wrong. You know, he looks like he might have trained some boxing here and there, but he's very stiff.
Yeah.
You know?
He's very stiff now.
Stiff, what? Aha. Don't speak ill of the dead. But you know, because MMA is the arbiter of manhood.
Yeah.
So you have these two multi-billionaires, and yet their lives are not enough. They don't feel fulfilled enough. They have to go out, and Elon Musk sends out the tweet, says, you know, oh, I'll do a cage match with Zuck, you know. And what did Zuckerberg say? Do you remember what he said his reply was? Send me location.
Oh, yeah.
Who's he quoting?
Khabib.
So obviously Zuck idolizes Khabib,
yeah.
Right? Which we all do. I mean, he's amazing. So you're talking about one of the richest men in the world, you know, who is inventing all these interesting ways of, you know, taking money from us on Facebook. a legit inventor of a new way of human interaction. Who does he idolize? This guy from the Dagestani, who wrestles bears in the middle of the Dagestani highlands, who you know, grew up as a farmer of herding, you know, I believe it's, you know, Khabib's family's goat herders. And to this day, Khabib, you know where Khabib lives? He lives exactly where he grew up, in the house he grew up in. He built another house next to it.
Wow.
And he's like a simple guy who, like, you know, has goats and, like,
the guy who has everything doesn't have one thing.
Yeah.
Masculinity.
It's because Khabib is no, that, you know what, Khabib is absolutely 100%. He's 100% no bullshit. The man is like, okay, fucking send me location, motherfucker. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he is zero bullshit. He's zero talk. Have you ever heard Khabib, like, trash talk? No, he'll just say, we'll see what happens in the ring. You know, I mean, he said a couple things here and there,
he's
but you know,
like the healthiest mental person ever. Like, he retired because of his father dying, his promise to his mother.
Yeah.
He didn't even look back.
He didn't look
and
back.
He stopped
yeah.
training because
he
wanted to
take care of his wife and stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Take care of his kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
He's
smart
he's
dude.
Very
he has nothing humble. To prove. Yeah. And very humble. Exactly. And so you cannot beat authenticity. You know, John Will, who I respect so much, and he's always says authenticity is this wonderful gem of a thing. And it's so true. And when people are uniquely authentic, you know, you don't have to lie about your achievements. You don't have to say anything. You're like, hey, this is who I am. And I have 100% pride and confidence and self-esteem with who I am. Then people are like, whoa, this guy is something else. Now, how do you achieve that? You know what? I don't want to sound like just an MMA booster, but there's nothing to build your sense of self than putting yourself in incredibly extreme circumstances and coming out of them, like a cage fight, or like that guy who free climbed the southern face of that mountain in the Midwest, right? It's unbelievable, like free climbing one of the most dangerous mountains in the world. I mean, obviously. It's pretty crazy, but you know, you cannot take away your sense of self when you've achieved something under such extreme conditions. Mm-hmm. And that's true for everything. It doesn't have to be MMA, but MMA is like I think the most accessible in the sports world of challenging yourself under actually extreme, because there's no more extreme condition in any sports world, because there's no other sport where people are actively trying to kill you. Now there's sports like F1 where you could die. But nobody's trying to actively kill you. Yeah. If I hold the choke and don't let it go, you will die. Right? You can die in MMA. And the guy is actively trying to hurt you. There's nothing more extreme. And if you can go in there and be incredibly successful, they will have your esteem, self-esteem will have this diamond that nobody can touch. And at any day, I don't care if you're Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk, you know, you're walking through a dark alley at night and big, you know, 300-pound Bubba comes behind you. You're like, okay, all this money doesn't mean crap anymore. So, of course, we idolize people who have that sense of, you know, self-preservation. And is it a little bit trucking in older versions of masculinity? Yes, for sure. But I don't think we as human beings can get away from that. The interesting thing is I think masculinity has transitioned not just for males, but this kind of larger masculinity is something that sometimes women aspire to too in the UFC. You know, maybe masculinity is not the right word, but the idea of, you know, physical prowess, you know, in the combative realm, you know, it's kind of weird. I really hope they don't fight, because first of all, Mark Zuckerberg is 70 pounds lighter than Elon Musk. And Elon Musk has trained before. He trained judo as a kid, right? He has trained before. And Mark Zuckerberg, I really respect his commitment. The guy trains really hard right now, but he's just starting. He's been training like not even a year or something, right? And he is uniquely awful at striking. Uniquely awful. Now, his grappling is okay. It's getting there. You know, it's a white belt, whatever. But because he's a terrible athlete, like Pantoja, because he's a terrible athlete, the striking is just phenomenally bad. Mm-hmm. And now people look at him and say, oh, Renee's being a little too harsh. I'm saying, look, he's going to go into a arena under pro rules against a guy who's 70 pounds heavier than you. Dude, if you're not really sharp on your technique, you're going to get your face fucked up so bad, you'll never recover from it. I've seen guys, jiu-jitsu champions, go into MMA and have their entire, you know, facial bone structure altered for the rest of their life because they did not understand the striking game well enough. Yeah. And they could not get to the clinch and dominate it. You're dealing with a guy 70 pounds heavier. I don't care if he's training or not. It should not happen. Now, what I would like to see is maybe have a grappling match with tap outs. Nobody gets
sure there'd be rules and like headgear and stuff like
that. No. I mean, supposedly it's going to be at UFC 300 and it's going to be, I don't know who'd sanction it. You know, it has to be an exhibition match.
300. I want a Super Bowl. Don't give me Elon Musk.
But you know what? You know what? That'll be probably the most watched MMA match ever, which is crazy, right? But it probably will be.
Ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. But, you know, you're talking, but, you know, sideshow antics and outsized personalities and, you know, it's almost a comic caricatures of exaggerated masculinity sell. This is why Donald Trump is popular. It's also why pro wrestling is big. these exaggerated, almost comical versions of masculinity sell newspapers. They buy, sell pay-per-views. They sell. Mm-hmm. You know, Demetrius Johnson with his, you know, jab cross, slip, clinch, throw, armbar, was one of the most beautiful flying armbars in the history of the sport. People forgot about it already. You know, if you guys know what I'm talking about, the old school guys. He fought the last one of his last fights in the UFC. He transitioned with 3-4 seconds left in the fight to clinch and jumping mat return armbar simultaneously. Everything in the air and then tap the guy out with like 3 seconds left. How can you be not more exciting? That should be in the highlight reel of every single sports, you know, achievement. But it's not, because people like Demetrius Johnson never trash talks. He never, you know, he's just Mr. Cool, you know?
Right.
But George St. Pierre said it about these. He's like, I really hope they don't fight, because you're dealing with two brilliant people who, if they're going to fight, they have to take time out of their lives to dedicate to this. And that time was better spent with them trying to change the world for the better. Now, is Elon Musk actually changing the world for the better? Not at Twitter, but who knows? Maybe SpaceX or Tesla or something like that, you know, can make a contribution to the planet. You know, I'm somewhat critical of Elon Musk because I think he's a little bit, you know, anyway, whatever. But narcissistic and things like that. But his companies have revolutionized, you know, space, the economics of space. That's amazing. Zuckerberg, same thing, very critical of him. But you're talking about a person who changed the way human beings interact in a profound way, right? Social media is a part of the human landscape for the majority of the world population. Maybe not Facebook, but some sort of social media, Instagram, whatever. That's amazing. You know, these people could be using their minds to do something better in the world than, you know, than like measuring their penis size, which is exactly what Elon Musk just said. He said in the weekend, he's like, let's measure our, you know, how big our you know whats are. I'm like, this is just childish and silly.
That's dumb.
Yeah, but this is also an issue. It's like a lot of tech bros, while they're brilliant in their field of technology, are emotionally and in terms of maturity very stunted. Mm-hmm. And also have still, even though they have succeeded in their realm, have deep-seated senses of insecurity because they have not challenged themselves. So do I believe in the challenge? Yes. However, do I believe that challenge should be broadcast on UFC 300 in front of everybody under Pro Rules? No. How about you do a jiu-jitsu match or a grappling match, and the winner has to donate like $500 million to charity.
Yeah.
You know?
Live stream it on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, right. And Threads. Yeah. and then the loser has to donate like a huge chunk of money to, like, you know, refugees around the world or Doctors Without Borders.
Let's set up a table and have Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg sit at each of the tables, and let every person in the United States come up and do an arm wrestling match, and whoever wins gets $1 million. I want a chance to win $1 million. You can get an MMA fight, UFC bullshit. Get out of here.
It shouldn't even be $1 million. Everybody should arm wrestle them, and if they win, they get like $10,000. Because even if they won against almost every person in America, they'd still be like billionaires. Because like, aren't they worth like $100 billion or something?
More,
like,
yeah.
So if you take the 300 million people in America and each give them $10,000, that's still like they still are.
Let's go storm their house. They can't stop us all.
Anyway, but
man, yeah, interesting.
So it's funny that how the landscape of MMA from human cockfighting and something like, oh, this is the death of civilization, which was one of the things John McCain said, many. You know, human cockfighting. He was so anti-MMA in the beginning.
Yeah.
To now, it is on every channel, major channel, all the time, and part of the larger sports landscape.
Yeah.
And just accepted like hockey and baseball. And so the Zuffas were succeeded to the point where now that the arbiter of modern masculinity is, do you do MMA or not? Right? It's very interesting change.
So be a man, sign up for Radical,
no,
or
no.
Be a woman. Both are allowed. Be a person.
Non-binary, too.
Non-binary.
All welcome. All welcome.
Strong, independent, self-actualized person at Radical MMA.
Why are you always boosting my school? I appreciate that, but it makes me feel weird.
You're a good teacher.
Well, thank you. Yeah, how would you know? I never taught. Well, I taught you a little bit.
I still got to come to the academy sometimes.
Come to the academy. You should train. You should come.
Well, I don't have time for that.
Oh, you don't have time for that.
No. Plus, my back hurts. It's not a good time for me. Well, that's good.
I'm going to tell you something funny. Yeah, this is radical. So anytime anybody makes an excuse at radical about something, I'm like, I stopped the class. Everybody has to do 50 push-ups.
Oh,
it's like, excuse, you're like, oh, I messed up because, and I'm like, all right, everybody, excuse time, 50 push-ups. Wow.
I'm glad we're not at radical right now. Because you'd be here a while.
Because, you know, like, excuses don't mean anything. Mm-hmm. You know? Anyway, but that's interesting how the world has changed.
Yes. Very interesting. A lot of changes very quickly. Mm-hmm. All right, well, that's it. That's all I got on my list to talk about.
That's it? No real steel?
I mean, I thought about it a lot because it makes sense, especially with two billionaires.
Yes, exactly. I was waiting for your real steel reference. I was like, when's it coming?
I don't want to just fall into that pigeonhole. But yeah, real steel would make sense here.
Yes, totally. I'm like waiting the whole episode for you to mention it.
Stay away from that reference.
All right, man. But I'm excited. I will keep you guys posted, and I'll see you guys next week.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter at @Marshall_culture and on Instagram at @MarshallCultureCast. Please leave a review on iTunes, and we'll see you next time on the Marshall Culture Podcast.